without
Iron McDonald and Sam Drummond.
And please now enter the screencast but with hi.
Hello. And Phil McCook from HP is here.
Hi.
Hey Phil. This is Mark and Mike and Abhijit from Google.
Oh, hello. How are you?
So I've started the screencast now. With the afternoon code, you should be able to get in now and see the common printing dialog in stage 3. do with, oh, so you want to get the open printing, the print vendors, etc., to define standard tags for the common print dialogue and common names, okay? So, open printing group, open usability, and print vendors.
But did I get them for whom?
For the common print dialogue.
Yeah, I mean, who will?
Print vendors, open usability, and open printing. But what are you confused about?
Nothing. Okay.
We didn't know you could print that. That's it. That's one of two.
Ah, yes.
Another one.
The one of yes.
There's two, I think. One more is like for the package.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Post the printer package. When the IRIS package, server package is depends on IRC.
Yes.
I think we discussed yesterday we need to improve the IRC dependency on
pure PPD packages. On packages in general which do not have binary executable, we should remove the LSB dependency.
Alright, say it again now.
On packages which do not contain binary executable and which are therefore architecture independent, we should remove
LSB.
The LSB dependence.
Alright, I got it.
This is your
Yes.
That's still
attached. Yes.
Okay.
For the script standaway packages and for the instructions for package building. And all no arch packages should not require.
And this morning
I didn't capture it.
Yes, yes. One action for the open printing website, there are the following. One, that reporting a bug against Jockey so that it gets faster for looking up open printing.
Good question here.
Report a bug on Jockey?
Yeah.
Yes.
Good question here. So on Red Hat, are you using package kit, right?
Yes.
So on Ubuntu, they're not using package kit?
No, they use Jockey for that.
But the team listed some fundamental differences between Jockey and package kit. Jockey is just no use injections, just the first stuff. But package kit, they can show the lessons, experience, they can ask you the questions.
Yes, one possibility is I could also look into whether I can switch this in Ubuntu. I can look whether Ubuntu already contains package kit, whether it uses it for something else. And if yes, I could perhaps switch over and use it also. But if no, or if there are some Ubuntu policies that non-free hardware drivers have to be loaded to package kit, then we must somehow get package kit through Jockey, then somehow Jockey must get kit.
I wrote it down, I'll send it out to you guys and correct them. if I didn't say it right, you guys can correct them.
Donald, at least you say everything right. I didn't bring it to you.
And
I brought the
Susie has package kit in Yacht.
Yes, the printer setup tool is Yacht, but I don't know what they use when Yacht requests the installation of a package. Yes, Susie is RPM based.
Where's contact?
Susie,
right?
Yes. Johannes Meissner. And another improvement which one can do is making the RPM and Debian packages on open printing being tagged with the printer module.
You
have operating version. Calling vendor driver down.
Yes, on the server there are only LSD packages. There are no packages which are depend on the operating system and the version. Yes. But to not give the manufacturer too big workload of making packages, we have agreed on to provide the packages as LSD packages.
We'll download the wrong one for that OS.
These
will get mad. How about that?
So you could put package the driver for each disk or set up an infrastructure packages for all this.
It's not an
extra
item, but printer manufacturers need
to put the right ID. Yes, this is also important. That's a keyword IEEE 1284 ID has to be added by all manufacturers to the PPT file, so that we can already reach matches without fuzzy matches.
Future!
Right, it has to be added to future PPD files.
Updating existing PPDs is welcome, but not required.
And that it has to be accurate.
Is this a
Neutral
separate driver repository on OpenBrick and to freeze?
The repositories on open printing have to be divided with the same scheme as the Ubuntu repositories are divided. Four repositories.
Four?
Four. Yes. Main and contrib and main non-free and contrib non-free.
Main and contributor, right?
Yes.
Free and non-free.
Yes.
Are there really no non-free PPDs?
Yes. There are non-free PPDs on OpenPrinting. And they were not uploaded by the manufacturer, but by a volunteer who has found these PPDs on the manufacturer's site, and they have redistributable, but verbatim redistributable licenses.
What is that main at the
country? Main is where the uploader takes responsibility, like manufacturer. So main will be downloaded by distributions by default. And contrib, there the uploader does not take responsibility, and so downloading from contrib is optional. So users can activate contrib, but by default it's not activated. It's exactly the same as it is in Ubuntu.
But right now
Yes.
So if we provide a new PPD file,
yes.
Will you help us, have the printer manufacturer also build a Fedora package or something?
Yes, we can talk with Tim how we will solve this. Tim, are you on the phone?
I am. I didn't hear the question.
It is about when a manufacturer is using a new driver or PPD. So should it also get simultaneously with getting onto open printing, also getting onto Fedora repositories, that it works also with your package kit approach? This is the question of George.
Who will make the Fedora packages?
Okay, so the question boils down to, I think, how are conflicts resolved between different repositories? Is that right?
No. I think the thought of George is that Fedora has this package kit mechanism,
now, and that he wants to support this too, not only the open printing mechanism, and then who builds the packages?
Okay, well, I mean...
Probably if one has pure PPD packages and therefore they are hosted on open printing, one can perhaps index them as your packages are indexed with the printer models, and simply the open printing main repository one could include in this package kit download.
Sure. Well, I mean, actually, if they were on open printing and included in the Fumatic DB tarball when the nightly snapshots are made, like the other PPDs are, then that will make its way into the Fedora Fumatic DB package naturally.
Ah, yes. So if you put up PPDs and they are in their printer entries in Fumatic DB and the PPDs itself are in Fumatic, or at least the PPD, it's already enough to have the PPDs in Fumatic DB, then Fedora will pick it up directly into the distro as Fumatic DB is a part of all distros, including for Fedora.
For manufacturers, PPD files are not part of Fumatic DB because they're not
standing
by XML. Ready-made PPD files.
Yes, ready-made PPD files. Your ready-made PPD files, they get into the distribution. And there are even printer XML files because you are making them.
But those are not in Fedora, right?
They are in Fedora. You are using the complete Fumatic DB package, Tim, in Fedora.
Yes, I am.
Yes, all the PPDs are in Fedora. Okay. Yes, your PPDs are in Fedora then. So at least once in a half year, all your new PPDs get into Fedora. Even if the Fedora distro does not download this package by default, by their package kit mechanism, it will be installed as soon as the user sets up the repo. Hi. We have waited for you. Now we had to do some session to overcome this time.
So we're going to the table. Till the
What cable? This is the sound cable, yes, the VGA cable is here. So there was no more demo of the dialogue now.
Oh.
Well.
Roll demo
test? Yes. But now we will have a nice sound demo.
Oh, and the new sharing code. For this afternoon session? Till?
What?
Till then?
The sharing? No, for the afternoon, it's the afternoon code. I've already informed the people on the phone. There are two codes, one for the mornings and one for the afternoon. So you need a code you need the presenter code now.
I'm in right now.
Now you can see it. Yeah.
EHERTERNAL A6J. do me a favor and bring me...
I have to close my, my screen sharing. Where is it? So now you can share your screen.
I think everything's ready. I am. Conference call's ready?
Yes, yes.
Who's actually on?
I raise. I want Tim.
Okay. Okay, let's get started. So, hello everybody. We're suddenly double the capacity after lunch. My name is Peter Sicking. I'm an interaction architect. I run a company called MMI Works in Berlin. Now, when I arrived here on Saturday, I came with a taxi from the airport, and I was really surprised. I saw this huge sign welcoming us. I found it fantastic. It's the Oracle thing, of course, but I'm very heartened by this enthusiasm. Not exactly what we look like when we work, but we dress more casual than that, actually. So, I always tell this, so what do interaction architects do? Well, to compare it to what a normal architect does, you can read there, we talk about the environment, it's about fitting it into the street or the landscape. Design is not about making it pretty, it's about making it work. And how people experience buildings. This is what we do. It's almost the same. The environment is now desktop, web, or handheld. And again, it's not about making it pretty. It's about making it work, how the experiences are. We talk about computer programs. So, and also here we are 1 year later, and we see sort of what happened, but we can ask ourselves also how did it happen, because if we remember from last year when we talked about driving the CPD further, that for most part there wasn't much volunteering about contributing work or even contributing a nickel towards his work. So let's see who did what. So we did our thing. We simply get at it. We do this in the time that we're not fully booked or recorded. And so for most part we pay out of our own pocket, our own boneheadedness of the cleaner out here to continue. So Lars did an incredible job actually. If you see saw the demo of the dialogue, and you saw yesterday how the 22 inch wide dialogue looked like a couple of months ago. That's a huge difference, and you will also see now how close it gets to our concept in the major parts. So, for instance, also Lars' real confidence in, for instance, a preview. Last year we were here, and most people in this room were saying, like, I will see it when it works, this preview. That's a lot of work getting it working. Lars believed in it and simply did it, which is the attitude.
He was really the best student I have mentored during my time at the university. Foundation. He has also updated the Fumetic to 4.0 and made it PDF capable. And so his work was really great. And he has also mentored two students last year.
But then again, Lars can also work on this intermediately because he now needs to pay the rent and he simply needs to be paid to do this work, else he's back to fixing Ghost Grid bugs for which there is a bounty system. So he, that's how he pays part of the rent in other ways. Also want to mention Per, one of the Summer of Code students from last year. He was also really efficient and also beyond the call of the duty of $5,000. Did what he could there. So that was also good. And of course there's Till as the factor of how things get done or must still keep moving forward. We've seen before in the morning his input. There was not only in the page range, what about if you have that short print job and you just want to take off the last page, and then we got thinking and we got to this control. It's also explaining the whole media size complex that is more or less complex of how that all works and what we can expect there.
Yes, so we have more or less once a month a meeting in Berlin. Kate, Peter and me and Lars and sometimes not all the four, but we have regular meetings.
So yeah, it's either about tackling new complex things in the dialogue or dealing with the development where we are and how we have to move forward. So yeah, Till is paid for by the Linux Foundation. That's how we can keep going at it. And one good thing Till also did was organize our mystery sponsor. This is a governmental organization in Germany that just doesn't want to do this as a high-profile thing because it gets them a little bit into trouble with commercial partners, closed-source commercial partners, etc. So they don't want to have it blown all over channels that they're sponsoring the development of free software. But they need a better print dialogue. Their whole 500 or more people in there got over from Windows totally to Linux, and suddenly their printing wasn't so brilliant anymore. So they're really enthusiastic about getting this working again. They're on KDE. So that's why quite a lot of the development at the moment was done on KDE. They paid for 2 months of us working on it and Lars working on it, but the downside of being government office is that for the extension it's now caught in red tape and we're sort of threatening to get stuck now on moving forward on this thing. Last is Relevantiv, company you know, those who were in Atlanta and Lexington, that's Jan Mühlich, who got me in the project. He's also the chairman of Open Usability. They donated the usability testing that I'm going to show you, donated that last year, donated that this year. So talking of that, we're back to the title, Reality Bites. So, yeah, usability test is really a reality check, and it's reality bites in two ways. One way is the usability test is simply debugging. Similar to code, you give it to a dedicated test team, they tear it apart, you fix the bugs. We make concepts, they test it, try to take it, find it where it really doesn't work, and we fix the bugs again. So usability test is not some kind of end school exam where it's all or nothing, it's simply a tool to debug things. The other side of it is, of course, that if there's nothing wrong with it, it moves beyond discussion that it actually works. The great thing about usability test is that it's the end of discussions. And I will present quite a few results, and it's not me saying that something works here, although Kate and I designed this stuff, is the usability specialist validating that, yeah, there's simply no problem with this part of the dialogue. You can just move on now. Or this is working out really great. So keep that in mind. Then what did we want to get out of the usability test? Now last year we tested on paper, this year on a prototype. We wanted to look at all the big things and starting very basic, like do people know where they have to go to change the printer, and what does it mean? Cortone preview, although, like Kate said, it tested marvelously last year, but now for real, flipping through it, how well does it work? The opening up from level 2 to level 3, big problems last year, so we really wanted to see if our solution works out, so we open up. Then like I said, we have problems with, okay, what's actually setting, what is this a tag, which just controls what you see here. I mean, paper fit is not going to make your print fit on paper, it just shows what you can do to make a print fit on paper. Do they know the difference? And the tags themselves, now that they really work like that, is it going to work? I have to warn you that when we look at this stuff, the parameters, that was not in the test. Those were a couple of weeks before the test. We didn't even know if we were going to get anything beyond generic, but Lars did again a bang-up job and gave us some more real or more closer to our design looking to work with. But when it gets to all kinds of things, yeah, we didn't exercise that part of it. They were just there to test other things, that when you change the parameter, do you, and as we can say here, do you go off preset? So here parameter should say, it's now 4 up, and then that has changed to where you can save. You saw this morning, these actual screenshots from the application. These are not the concept drawings you saw this morning. This is already from Teal's machine.
Yes, so it's your SSH in from your place in Raleigh. Or did you even succeed to SSH into my machine from here, from San Francisco?
There's no difference on the internet with that. From the cafe in San Francisco.
Yeah, so my VDSL is working well. So that I have 10 megabits upload speed.
It wasn't fast, but it's like watching the thing in slow motion, but I knew where I wanted to go, so I simply wanted to get this taste to show it to you. And the last thing, and Kate also touched on that, this quite complex issue of if page ranks comes out of the application that puts everything on paper, then these pages can be put on sides. You see here exactly, like, you have four times less sides than you have pages because it's four sides per page. And then at the end, if you divide by duplexing, that's going to go on used sheets. That also, that's also again another concept. So we got these three concepts and how our users going to deal with that. We really wanted to see. We thought we had done a good job. Now see, one thing is the bug here.
Can point out that the page range under that is not working.
That's the bug.
Yes, this source pad is a real dialogue now and not a mock-up.
What do you mean, you get it with the bugs? Or not just concept bugs, but also program bugs. Yeah. If you do 4 up, then these pages are these pages, and they should say 1 to 4 of 23. The whole size issue should actually fall away. So that sort of interferes with our tests a bit, and it leaves questions open for next time, but in a way, we only noticed that after the first or second test or something that, oh. But Lars was already fixing bugs in the evening and the weekend and wherever in other he was in another congress in the UK actually, and he was helping us a hell of a lot fixing these issues, but some of this stuff with page ranges is actually incredibly complex because it actually goes straight against the ITP spec of how it should be internally communicated. It is a bit disconcerting, but we dealt with it. So then the last thing is, now we got multiple copies. Is this complex over here? The copies and the collates, do they get it? Do they find it? Do they know where to go to get things done when they went through some assignments? So the tested 10 participants, they, to my surprise, they were all Linux users. They were And for benefits of showing they're here, they all the tests were done in English. So I can show you the films later, and you'll be able to know what went on. So usability specialists from Relevante put the results up like this. This is a wall. And a big sheet and lots of post-its of good, bad, issues, etc. And then we had a meeting, the four of us, and...
looks like this desktop architect meeting. Well, we had also sessions where we put points on the wall and like that.
In this case, those are all usability outcomes and issues, and maybe some quotes, some individuals who had some problems with it, and we talked all the way through it. So, next up, the results, and I'm gonna go through about 18 themes with you. There are gonna be films for that, and I'm gonna show the film and then summarize what the hell is actually going on, if it's good or bad, and if it's bad, wire is actually the problem, because it's usually not immediately apparent. So now we're gonna go to the big moment where we're gonna see if the sound works, which we're gonna find out right now.
Basic induction and training. Maybe sometimes there you can do this preview thing, where you can have a bar show how it goes at all. So I would have this look before I read through it once again, and I'll
expect. Yeah, the name and the size. But not so much just that it prints. Dialogue, well, I have in a good case a preview of my page, or of the first page of the document, or the page I choose. I can choose the printer and a number of copies. If it's a colored document, if I want to print it colored or black and white, I would say I want to have a simple dialogue with just a few settings, and maybe some advanced or extra properties which I can choose in a separate dialogue. So like quality settings or paper size, or the tray selection of the printer if you have more than one tray and stuff like that.
So, sorry for cutting that short. What did we see from that? First of all, and it really went through all the tests. You're talking here about their expectations of what, before they see even the dialogue, like if you print, what do you expect? What is there? The big black hole that Kate also talked about. Printing does not exist. For most part, they had even trouble to formulate anything that would expect it. More like, so what is there between pressing on print and having it in my hand? There's just a black hole. So you also see from that users come in many different sizes. So it goes from really people who do not think about printing at all, to the last guy you saw there, who even, even uncannily described, like, you know, how we sort of like things organized and even knew quite a few print parameters that are always there. That's the span of the whole field almost, and there's 5 million people in between, distributed like one or more Gauss curves on it. And it really hit me hard with some of the participants. I observed 5 tests, Kate also, that there were some people who were really saying like, I got a problem, I call a guy, and he tells me what to do, and then and that's how I solve it. I wouldn't know how to do anything more. So really also being confronted again when you dig into all these parameters, that there's a, I want to say the low end of users, but people who really don't care about printing, it's very important to realize. So next topic, we're gonna do an easy task there, to do quick and quick and easy with a couple of fragments.
Maybe look here, my printer is recognized already. I guess this one in where we are is the printer selection.
So, as we were talking about the printer selection, where also printer management will be attached from later on. So, that's an example of it just works. So, let's move on. Oh,
question. This is mostly, have you tested mostly this in consumer kind of setting or more like enterprise-wide setting? For example, in a company there might be like 100 printers or so in a big, very big office or government building, but this would not be kind of the right widget you want to select something like that.
I know what you mean. First of all, what we were testing is not can they select a printer out of use list, etc. First of all, can it find the control? Is it in the right place? Is that order from top to bottom, is that the right one? And that's what we wanted to do here. There will be further tests, and yes, we've thought about that situation where there is 100,000 printers on the same subnet, or whatever it's called, and which happens in enterprises. And we have solutions for that, but that also will need separate testing, because this test lasted in itself for each participant 45 minutes, maybe short of an hour, and then they're quite exhausted of all that. Just exercising very basic topics. You cannot squeeze in everything, but we thought about that.
How many people participated in the survey?
Who?
How many people participated?
There were 10 people in the test. There were more private individuals, self-employed professionals, people like that. Oh, it went up and down. That I can also say about it went up. It's actually a funny thing. You ask people how much do you print, sort of, and they're like,
"What is the maximum? What is the maximum?"
I was coming to that. So you ask them like, "How much do you print?" And one printing does not exist factors also. They don't record how much they print, but you ask a bit more and you get out of them like, okay, some people print in bunches, like sometimes only 2 times a month, then 20 times a day because they need to get something finished, so there's like sporadic use, and then there's other people with steady use. How would I say? I requested people who were more in an office situation and were printing in this way. I'm not sure. Well, I think professors.
And you've got 60 customers, and you're able to offer
cluster of single printer. So all the personal lasers, you can imagine what that is, are in the same cluster, and they have one reference design that we show here. There's also high-speed lasers. Those are the ones that are quicker and faster than work groups. They're the ones.
Yeah.
So I would also say that, hey, if you're so really interested how this goes down in a hardcore office environment, I think we are we're happy to set up a test for that. Of course, if you pay for it. So this is also like I presented before, who pays for everything that happened here from now to then down here. So when we are usability testing exactly what we want, but we need to have validated that we know it works, which is, yes, on a qualitative basis, not on a quantitative basis. So all I can say is, if you want especially proof of that group, then just ask us. Sure, we can figure it out how that can be done. So, and this is also about the usability specialist coming back with the result and simply saying, like, hey, this goes 10 times in a row, like, no problem. So we're in a baseball game and it's 10-0. Maybe you want to have an extension, you see you can equalize out. I don't think so. 10-0 is just game over at that point for that kind of thing. It simply works at that point.
Because the nature of printing is some people with a different idea, when you ask somebody how often do you print, they go, well, you know, I don't need to do very much of their things about it. And you say, well, what's the need? I say, well, maybe, yeah. And then you say, and is that just at home? And you go, well, yeah, it's at home, and you know, in the office or with university or wherever else I do printing. And so you get a picture of what they print.
Is that just a picture?
No, the dialogue is designed for everyone. The dialogue is designed for every Linux user. It's designed for 95% of the printer market, which is covered by the 7 clusters. And that's what we do. We do specialized designs for each cluster because simply a needle printer is not the same as a huge high-speed laser printer is not the same as a large format that another cluster recovered, which is like A0. Totally different target groups, totally different products, and the product really permeates excellently into what the printing dialogue is. It's specialized by the manufacturer for each product. So we're looking here at the generic mechanisms that we have designed and we're seeing if they work. That's what we're doing, and that's what we're doing with the stuff that you have. This is early testing with what we got right now. And we have this stuff designed right now, we got it implemented, and that's why we're testing now. If we were testing by autumn, it would be way too late. And as I showed last year when we did a round of usability testing, a lot of big concepts just didn't cut it, which is why we worked so hard on it this year. And this was simply another, like, okay, we know we got a good model, but this interaction is simply not working out, so redesign and another redesign. Until we got to this point, we will show now that the big holes now all work out in a generic way.
If the design process requires to get most of the initial sample execution, okay, you guys have to need to use the test, because most of the customers can.
Well, A, we have this. B, there is extensively documented on the wiki how we surveyed the market for every company who at that point was involved with open printing. We surveyed all the printers and all the data related to the cluster. So there's marketing data about features and how many percent are color and how many percent are networked in USB, etc. How many percent have mailboxes, etc. to know what features are there and how we can make this prototype printer for a cluster, what features should it have, and how should it be designed. Of course, the act of designing this is looking forward and making sure that stuff works. When it comes to, like, something complex like how the hell does a media type work and trace selection, etc. There's, for instance, we meet with Till to, who knows, cross-manufacture actually how a lot of stuff works. When it came to ICT profiles, we went to the mailing list and really got some really helpful replies from people who are this far into ICT profiles. And to understand the problem before we made some solution. And yeah, the material, the whole problem is incredibly complex, but we managed to find a solution that covers all the bases. So, all the use cases. One thing I can say about this kind of design, that normally if you design a UI for an application, it's like an architect in a house. This kind of thing is operating system infrastructure. This is like designing the roads for a new town with 5 million inhabitants. And we make the road plan and make the neighborhoods, etc. You can never talk about the specific building by itself. You always have to talk about big categories of buildings that are going to be here and these going to be dysfunctions, etc. And this means that we do a lot of generic solutions where every time we go down to an example and we now have to know that we cover all the bases in this design. But the core of the design is also that at the end the manufacturers populate the print dialog with their functionality, and we have made the mechanisms for presets, for tags, and the parameters to make it work.
Which print company actually participates? I'm not sure about
For instance, were you in Montreal? Were you, for instance, in Montreal? The Montreal summit two and a half years ago, I think so, yeah, 2.5 years ago.
Yes, the 2007, fall 2007.
Because there I presented a very early design and there was a loads of feedback from manufacturers. Also the whole understanding of what you guys need in customization of this has gone into it, for instance. Understanding the print technology, understand how via print servers, printers are not exactly talking back to the dialogue anymore, are they? Well, how autistic that situation is. That also goes into the design of these controls, for instance. This way, for instance, Till and I went to Japan to talk to have a meeting with all the engineers of all the Japanese companies. No, that's not you. You're Korean, no? So, thank you, serious. So, that's also the level where it plays. When it's about how does this thing work well? Well, that is something that, yes, is designed for the two desktop environments. And where we are working in the interest of, at the end, actually making your printers work. Because at the moment, like HP said in Lexington, and it was quite impressive, in Lexington in 2006, they gave a short status of what they're doing. It was like, okay, we got the drivers, we support 1,000 printers, 10 years backwards, everything great. But the current dialogues that are there on the Linux platforms are so bad that it's hurting our business. This is costing us money. And that was sort of like the the demand that there is for redesigning this thing. So, yes, we're making this work, and we're making this work on two platforms, and we're making this work for all printers, and we're making sure that it is a common printing dialogue, that it works for any kind of company. We make sure that anybody can come, any company can customize any aspect of this when it comes down to the parameters and functionality that they have. They can completely control what presets they have in there. They completely control the text tagging. So, but at some point, it's simply interaction design, and 25 or what is it, 1984 till now, 36 years, well, 26 years of printed dialog design have shown that, that yeah, it's better that for once it's done professionally, actually.
But, I mean, I'd be interested to know if that can work in the work, but maybe ask me to see the test results. Maybe like
for
the...
I work for the
So you have to
maybe when we're talking about that part exactly, is working out really work? Well, if you observe the tests, you see that people are really working the preview. Whenever they have a task to update their parameters, etc., it's immediately back to the preview, and later we should also see the paper use, the sheet count, that really makes them check twice, or really gives them the confidence that this is going right, or this is really not going right. So it's a huge factor in the overall design, and it's working out really well. Actually, it's working out so well that when I was observing the test, I was almost disappointed, because I think, take one look at Windows, they're like, oh yeah, what happened to the preview? There's no such thing there. So it's, the thing is that in the tests, people, after these initial reactions, went, oh, what's there? Oh, that's good. By the time the test went over, it was fully normal that it was supposed to be there. It's like, for 10 or more years, they already had the right for that thing to be there, and they were simply waiting for it to turn up. Not consciously, but it was like, it's just the right thing to put there at that point. And it really takes a hell of a lot of the voodoo out of printing, which is one of the biggest goals that we have. Now, not everything is good news, because this is something we put in over the last, or just before last year. You can see lots of things from the preview, but here you cannot see whether this is A5, A3, or A4. It would always be simply scaled, maximized on it. So for some things that you cannot see in the preview, and we've got very clear rules about that, is things that are not immediately visible in the preview itself, and that are important to know about, that are really the main things, not every other parameter there is. We write a little summary there. Turned out that worked out in the following way. I also got a film to show you about that.
I didn't really pay attention to it. I think you can change it. I was looking there.
I will see it as a checkbox. It's not quite clear. I would expect that those information are the information from PS, but I hear also those information, and if I don't test it, I don't know if it's stuff I changed or the stuff just PS from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite clear what it means.
It's fine, but the stuff which you should know if you bring out.
It's fine. So, fully used to it after seeing it for the first time since in his whole life. But that summary at the top. One thing that came immediately out of the test, and just one of these, it's only one result out of 10, but immediately gives you something to think, like the guy says, because the task was print the PDF, so the whole context was like the PDF application, the print out, and so on. So it's much more than normal, his kind of thing, and he was like, is that from the original document? And that gives us a thing like, oh, we have a different version. It must have some more labeling that is clear about that this is about that, and that is what you're going to get out of your printer. So the other thing was, could be a tad more bolder. People missing it, we really tone it down because we don't want it to dominate, but it could be turned up a little bit in that sense. That's also clear for them. So that's what I want to say about the summary that we built in there. It gives us some homework to do. So then this issue, it turned out that now there was simply no problems with people differentiating with what is what. So it stopped being an issue, where last year it was a big issue. This year it's pretty unexciting. There was simply no mistakes, nobody got fooled by it. Again, the differentiation is there, and they know what does what without hesitation. So, let's have another movie. So so you mean preset?
Actually, I'll connect to, but I have to reset it every time. So, if the program gets better, so it should be a one page result, color A4.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets reset every time I close the program. But it would be neat, you know, if I could save this, template config or whatever. So, I could use it later.
There is the selection of some predefined settings. So there's some kind of save information here, so I would try to click on it, like the save button, and
John, have you seen?
You see, that didn't work yet. It was just a dummy that was put there, but in the design we really wanted to make saving a bit more prominent, so people start really using it and get over that hurdle of making them to start with. So it was normally you would pack them into the menu here, but taken out and brought more prominent there, exactly in the situation where you're off preset, no longer in the preset itself, and you got chase parameter and offer there to save it.
And then yesterday I demonstrated the save function to you in the 20 minutes dialogue.
Intact?
No.
No,
in fact, I don't remember an email where Intact told that he wants to do some presentation about Fulcrum. Yes, we can go up to 3 with the dialogue.
So, talking about this thing here, one thing that was again, printing does not have this factor. You notice that, that people found it with either no effort or one time looking around and there it was. But only for those people for who it actually existed. If something like saving of presets actually is basically a non-issue, it's simply that's not part of it. If print is just like when it comes out of the printer, then the whole thing didn't even exist for them. And that was also, again, very interesting to see. There were still implementation issues here that these two didn't look the part that they should do, so that was also interfering a bit with our testing, so it doesn't look top-notch as far as we're concerned, but in itself it was really encouraging and the way to go forward.
Question. Saving a preset, customized preset, can the user rename it?
Of course, every time you save a preset, which is everything that's within the blue, you give it your own name.
There's
a whole
management
set of removing them, renaming them, and if you remove the factory ones, bringing back the factory defaults, etc. So people can, presets are a start given by the manufacturer for out-of-the-box great results. Immediately print the photo, the photo printer comes out beautifully. But after that, it becomes a user mechanism where they maintain their own presets for what they do in there.
So is it extensible? You can have iterations of plain paper with different presets? Or is plain paper one choice? Once you change the preset, if you want to change it again, you got to change it again.
Yeah. These presets encompass all this stuff over here. Actually, we've shown this morning that in the whole print-on or media thing itself, there you can save your own media type, which means it's only local to the whole print-on media type kind of a thing. This here saves the whole shebang over there. So, one thing that was actually quite interesting with saving default is that somebody noticed like, hey, in the task they had to modify the stuff. Hey, can everybody pay attention, please? Thank you. They had to modify this range, and then later they came to saving the thing. Somebody already knows, like, hey, is that going into my preset? Because, so we know we got a problem there. We really got to a thing that needs to be redesigned, because this is of course incredibly specific to the job that is coming in, the number of pages that have been transformed by the actual application. And so this is a design problem that needs to be solved in a different way, because there can't be any doubt whether that's going to be part of the preset or not. Communicated from the start that that's the case or not. And I don't think the page range is going to be part of the preset. It's specific to the job. And presets are definitely 100% for a way of use over years of use, not for one document. Now I'm going to have three topics in a row.
So in this case, I see we have a former US letter. So I will search for the settings to change it to the German A4 format. So I will press detail.
I think I will press on the details button to find out how to choose four slides on one page.
Mm-hmm. I will details. because I don't know this program, I will look smoother, different options. I can choose everything else.
Surprisingly,
that woman said, is that World of Warcraft factor that you put in?
So,
but what you can learn from that is, yeah, and what you also see, we had a non-developed tag system, so clicking on a lot of things did nothing. In the real world, clicking on things will always do something, and there will even be feedback with by flashing the labels, like what's connected to what if you click on one of the tags. So we can build up a mechanism. That's all up there that made that the system by itself, why the tags are there, why there are so many, etc., stopped making sense because the situation is not fully developed. Either setup was hurting the test.
I have a question for the web tab.
Very good, because here is where the mechanism is going to work. First of all, we're seeing from this that, just like the trace selection, etc., it may not be even information users really find important that they need to know for the job. Second of all, per type of printer, or even on the control, yes, even marked up in the PPT, you control at the end which ones of the parameters are so important that they should show up here apart from the actual, so you control what you show in there for your types of printers that you sell. Some things have to be here. You have to show whether it's you, A4 or letter, because else things are missing from the preview that people really, really want to know. Especially, if you go from A5, A4 to A3, the preview doesn't change, because it's, okay, the formatting can change, but this stays the same size because it's simply maximized. So some things have to be written out in the words, and only when it's really important in the summary at the top. Well, we're going to give examples of what we think users find really important, and from there you can take it for your own printers in the direction you want to take it.
But doesn't the shape change
from
on the
convention
to the
media?
So
A3, A5, A4 are all the same ratio. Envelope, you see me, like, that's clear, but...
Can you just put a ruler, a couple of rulers?
A couple of what?
Ruler. Measure.
Oh, no. You can do a survey about how big people think, A4 is something that's known. Having to read the ruler that this is 30 and this is 20.5 centimeters or something like that.
I live in a world where we put on all kinds of different types.
But they know by certain names, no?
No. Labels.
Okay.
Customizable.
But, I mean,
oh, one puts a little line under on it, under it, which is 10 feet. Then
no, actually, let's go back to the need. Let's go back to the need, because you say this is not enough for you. So...
I was just thinking about the problem of the premium scale.
Uh-huh. Because
the preview is a scale, right? But the absolute dimensions.
Even if you work with custom sizes, which means you're no longer on something that has a label, then we can put the inches or the centimeters in here from you. This is 10 times 8 centimeters or something like that. And if they give it a custom name, the custom name will up. If it's unnamed and on the fly, it just the dimensions will show up. Actually, the one about the dimensions is something I will remember now. Because so, testing out the paint range. So, watch out, because here's going to be trouble, so it's going to be enjoyable. Everybody likes bad news.
Hello.
when people go there for disjunct page ranges and
pick a page here and there out of the complete job. Yeah, the syntax is clear to them, what you can do there. Like you say, that guy got himself snookered with type 8 to 5 and then the system didn't know what to make out of that. The preview sort of went not haywire, but I think it showed only one page or something like that. It went to an undefined state. So that input over there needs a hell of a lot of auto-correction of things. You type in 8 to 5, it makes it 5 to 8. You type in no separators or semicolons or God knows what in between the number ranges, you actually, it gets auto-corrected to commas, for instance, to show it like, this is how we always work. That's actually the blunt rules, and then actually specifying this as a UI specification kind of have probably some subtle cases where, I mean, this text input box needs to be compassionate, not a auto-corrector actually. It needs to sort of be very compliant about what it accepts and make sure you get out with the right print at the end. It can really use a hint, either with mouse over or even under it. And all that needs to work together to have a much higher success rate with this control, because how it is right now, it can do it. And the other one, the four pages one, we had a nice little problem that the job was four pages, so it's exactly the borderline where it's shown. They're all on to start with, because that's the whole job. And it was their task to print 15 copies and only page 3, because that had a correction on it. We noticed that in a state like this, where they're all on and they just have a little blue outline around it, you cannot see whether they're all on or all off. That's simply not obvious on first look. That needs to be corrected. Also, the implementation, when they're off, it didn't show that there's a big fat cross through them, so that they're crossed out, which would have helped to get people faster to result, but that doesn't alleviate the situation where they're all on and you have to recognize that all at once. So corrections are needed. Let's see, that's the whole problem, and with that, at that point, it's corrected. Oh, what I wanted to say is, yeah, 15 copies, and they had 3 on, and it's still set 45 here. In these kinds of exercises, where they're trying to get the right number of pages out, this indication here that Kate came up with, and actually it was sort of intended to show, like, also, hey, here's how you save paper. You know how much sheets you're printing out all the time? So here's a little indicator that helps you to save on that and feel good about what you're saving. It's used a lot as a checksum of is this the right result, which was very encouraging. And even when people didn't do the exact math, like 3 times 15 is 45, they saw the 45 and thought, that's not it, what I need to get out of here. So they keep rummaging around to try to correct the settings to get what they were told to print off. So that helps a lot with having very disappointing long prints with way too many pages that simply spills toner, paper, and people's reputations in the office. So we're really happy to see how that one works out. Okay, it's the last movie, I think.
Hello, I would just increase the copies made to 5. So then the new option appears. So codec need to get a separate out. Okay, so this changes the order of printed out copies. So I would choose keep together, because otherwise I need to do it afterwards manually. Four copies.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
What's that?
I can group the pages.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to have like 4 or 5, because I have 4 people, so I choose the keep together.
Okay.
I just want to print 4 times.
What is that?
How much heat I should put in my
No,
okay, that could be, for example, if I do like this, we just have 10 pages at the end.
Page one or five? I guess I use five in the end, five sheets.
So, collect, okay, that's to make like a page one 7 times. Page 2, 7 times, that's collate, yeah, that's maybe collate. And decollate would be 1 to 40 and again. Is it like this? Yeah, the icons are helping more than the text.
Another issue is also that we saw
the position of this. It's really logical when you're level two, and this is the dialogue, and the buttons are here. So you reach straight to, you check the number of sheets, and you press OK. And now it's more like done, and it's over there. We saw between the lines of how the responses were that there is something not totally satisfactory with how that works. So again, an investigation about can something be done about it, and in the whole scheme of things, because yeah, everything in the dialogue is slots together like a little puzzle. Let's see if we can change something. Rounding off. So what's the big deal? I want to tell you about this. For the last half an hour, we've been talking a lot about errors that are, in a way, small bugs that we have in our concept that we found through the usability testing. I mean, the big deal is that the big stuff, the level 1 to 3 mechanism, the preview, and the methodically of when you change a parameter, you see it in the preview, and that makes the whole parameter operation so much more safer than to do. The tagging mechanism, the big design concepts that are in the dialogue, they work. And that's very encouraging, and also makes that we can move on what is indeed the details, and for medium level and very small design issues, and work further on the parameters. What it's also about details count is, yeah, you saw in the implementation, or we saw in the implementation, that certain things that weren't done exactly like it was specified, that were either done just slightly wrong, or a slightly different control, or control was just a bit more prominent than in the design itself, it immediately started degrading the usability. It was quite apparent from that quite a few times some could evidently be called small implementation details simply degraded the experience. So I'm gonna as the final encore, is gonna show you some quotes from people. And you can read those for yourself. That's an interesting one to read. I'm thinking that he was talking about the PDF printing dialogue. I'm happy to answer that. I do that in a separate session, or I would do that in a separate session, but yeah, I can take apart the Adobe print dialogue for what it is. All the old printed concepts that are there in half an hour and show like this and this and this and this and this is all the kind of stuff that usability tests bad and that we have actually paired. The other thing that you also should keep in mind is, okay, the tests were about printing PDFs. So they work in the context of I'm in a PDF viewer and then I print it. That's also where the comment can come from, because the Adobe PDF print dialog is made for the PDF application. It's made for one application. We work for these 10,000 plus applications, and it has to work with all of that. We're application agnostic. We actually allow applications to come inside the dialog and put in their parameters to optimize the dialogue for the task at hand, actually. So that's also a big difference. On the? Funny enough, it was on the other side last year. And it looks really odd.
Right. Just following the back of that software.
official language, right to left or left to right, when it's written on computers. It's not top down, I know that. Okay, so, but you got your book flipping direction is the other way around, I know that.
Right.
And maybe that is a factor why you feel that it should be exactly on the other side. So maybe the book flipping direction matters for how the two panes are organized by themselves. Because yeah, the whole dialogue turns around for when you are right to left languages. That's
but
normal.
Not when you're speaking this.
Sorry?
Not when you're speaking this.
The left side is for Latin languages. Is simply the other way. Just doesn't work. It simply
actually,
isn't right.
Originally, that was one of the big problems that there's too much speaking on the right, and that meant that when
the counterexample to the PDF dialogue, because somebody really liked how much simpler this dialogue was to begin with than the thing that Adobe spits out when you print from the Adobe Reader. I thought that was a nice answer for
give an SLR camera to a person who takes the first photo.
So yeah, we got these levels that you can engage more or less with more or less complexity. I like this one really. That. this is what we do it for, and this is also a great endorsement that actually a woman who said who didn't know that it's just going to be rolled out for everybody anyway, but the fact that when she can get it open and free on her system, she will put it there and make the efforts to actually get it there. Also a big endorsement compared to the situation that we got right now. So that's the end of my talk. That's where you can reach me, and also the blog where I blog about all the concepts that we've put in up to now into the dialogue. And
a bit more strategic question.
Even one does not find students
who gave $5,000 for 3 months full-time working to work on printing. Yes. Printing in volunteer software writing does not exist.
Yeah, definitely incredibly unsexy to work in this, although it's quite a bit of innovation for a rather state world.
So the only solution is to pay people with it to do printing, to implement printing stuff at their base work. I don't have a basket for it, and so I'm asking whether someone, especially as the side of the manufacturer, could help in this form. When we have it implemented, we send it as a patch as an improvement to the desktop project KDM GNOME, so that they integrate it as their printing dialog, and then as a part of the KDM GNOME project, it flows into all the Linux distributions. And this way it gets the standard printing dialog and users simply use it. And I hope they will say, oh, there's a much nicer, much better dialog. And oh, this dialog is the same in all the applications.
So you're saying that after all this work is done, there's a chance that I'm not here about this?
Yes, the thing is, we have to supply it readily. Inside the KDM GNOME project, there's no volunteer who wants to work on implementing that.
They're very enthusiastic if we supply the patches.
Yes.
I presented this at Guadec and at Academy, and it's like, certainly for KDE, it's also a huge problem for that, but also at Guadec, it was, in the GNOME world, it's like, yeah, simply not up to scratch what they have now, and nobody can be arsed to work on this. So, it's very welcome, but nobody there is going to volunteer to write the line of code for this.
Okay.
So the acceptance is there, it's just that the pressure to hand them is still not there.
Well, coming back to the funding problem with the manager, I find it helpful to understand what the cost is going to be before I make an investment.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be helpful. And if you want help from the printer community, from the manufacturer community, you give us an idea of what you need.
One could perhaps more or less say, if we succeed to full-time employ Lars Übernickel for 6 months to give him enough money that he can live 6 months, can work on that 6 months, then he will finish there.
You're right.
Oh, what do you...
I have to watch out that Lars, he has to live, so he's taking on part-time jobs and other assignments at this time. And
so, if I understand this,
part of it is
there's a sole developer of this, is that correct? And you folks are doing
design
and usability testing, but there's one guy writing the code?
Yes.
And that guy's large.
Yes, and we have a second, we can try to get a second guy in. There's a second guy who was working well on this dialogue in the Google Summer of Code.
The one I mentioned there from Sweden.
Yes.
Went beyond the call of duty to really deliver good stuff. He's really getting...
Yes, he has made the dialogue which I've shown yesterday, where only the size...
So do you have an SRS?
But the functionality is
working.
What?
Do you have an SRS as project version? Software requirement specification.
If I may speak clearly and naively, there's a lot of milling around and very slow direction, very slow vector here. And here's a problem that can be solved, so I solve it with specifics. And you're asking me and the other guys in the room for money.
Let me say what there is. Okay, on the wiki, if you print it out and it's done that for our $X, there's a 106-page document specification of the print dialog, and it's growing. all the time. So there's serious specification of how this is all supposed to work. But that's not finished, and we work on it when we can. If we have three projects on the boil, we do nothing on printing. So it really helps, for instance, that the donor for 2 months managed to sponsor us and just steamed right ahead and paid on it full time. I cannot promise anything. As long as we have paid work, we have to do that and drop printing. I would really like that the donor X would have come through with another 4 months of development with a budget for that, because it simply would have get this thing really close to finish in the specification work and in the implementation work. Unless it's a government over, so it's simply on a paper stack somewhere.
Let me ask this question. How much was the initial charge from Author X?
How much did they...
About $30,000.
But I would say, you know, you're absolutely right, it's going to be interesting to look at the meaning of the phrase and what it is, and what we want to know, what the art is going to be, and 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 what the art is going to be.
Right, 6 months
full time.
Yes.
And
to complete the specification, the specification and the implementation.
At last, we'll be on full time.
Okay. Could you put a rough figure on that 6 months? Six man months.
Yes.
Well, I mean, obviously you're going to try and get funds from multiple companies. I don't think you're going to get one company.
You want a ballpark figure, then multiply by 3, by 54, so that's 30,000 times.
And then the time frame, assuming it's done 6 months, then it has to go to the other group for incorporation into the prototype.
Well, HP was already asking, like, when can we test this with our PPDs? Well, actually, should way before the end of those 6 months, should already be beta tested with all kinds of your existing and new PPDs. How this is working out, and our target goal is still the autumn distribution.
Optimistic.
And also, like,
yes, it's less than 6 months left until the feature breach of.
I have a four.
On the other end, have you built applications yet?
The application patching naturally has also to be done.
We don't yet have an application.
Yes, that's the case.
Well, let's put it this way. I presented this at WADEC and an academy. It's also a matter of these applications built on whatever GNOME and KDE ship and what is the infrastructure way of getting printing done. And I think it's a very good idea from TIL to have like reference patches for the most popular applications, which also needs really engagement with them to understand how they look at printing, especially cross-platform. But let me know, we are working.
And just for understanding, from the printer point of view, all it needs is a compliant PPD.
Actually, all backward, totally backward compatible. But if you want to make use of great new things, then you have to start adding some new stuff that Till outlined yesterday into the PPD.
And there is one page, writing and packaging printer drivers on open printing. The link you find on the website of the Open Printing Summit, where all is described, which I have talked about yesterday.
Peter and Till?
Yes?
It's now a little bit past 3 your time, and you sort of need to wrap up and take a little bit of break because I suspect a few other people may call in at 3:30 for
Mark and
Mike's Google presentation.
Yes, the 3:30 presentation will start in time at 3:30. So if we have still questions here, we will not take more than half an hour for them.
Okay. I was just reminding you.
Thank you very much.
What do you think about the dialogue?
Yeah, I mean, I think the view is that he reflecting any of the settings in the preview, as he was talking about, for example, collate and all those things.
We have some instructions.
We're
working on the biggest laser print.
We're working on the workroom lasers, which already have some finishing options. And they're going to be the high speed ones that have mailboxes, punching, stapling, stitching, inserts. The whole thing is going to be one cluster where we designed that. So that's how I covered up. Hundreds of printers that are sort of the same, we do one reference design for them and then manufacture
So if you kind of
for each cluster we have one prototype printer.
This
has a feature set.
Yes, I'm more
of that feature set we designed. The feature set is really representative of the whole bits of extra things, etc., but not crazy. But what the manufacturers do themselves, they put in their own parameters to control them. That's up to your own. That's your own special features. But a little tree like Windows does for us or things. No, you integrate them in proper parameters inside the tagging system. And with that, you can handle 10, if not 100 parameters at the same time with the proper tags. And the dialogue can grow, they get an extra column, they got a huge graphic to do booklet making, then you do it there in the special booklet. It makes it very difficult. I studied physics, so it's like a physics. In one moment you're talking about the universe, 5 minutes later you're talking about an atom, about the tiny thing, then you go big again and small, and you go up and down all the time. It's incredibly challenging.
You should have 10, Are they from Europe, or
how
do you add the tags to
it? They were local to Berlin.
We have a few. So they're not native.
They were non-native, and I was not so happy with them. So I'm going to the next test. I'm really going to say, hey, you have to take each option. Never mind Linux. I would really want native speakers.
No problem.
And second of all, I want to speak. And it gave me a hard time, but I really want some people from different situations.
One of the students that they will
take.
You design each tag to
give a kind of feel,
and this is no problem.
Which
you cannot
just describe.
Thank you for saying that.
This
is all about making these printers work better. It's the same printer, but with a better dialogue, they can use more, and people get less disappointed by it.
We're not doing a lot, just going for any printer in any
brand. I've already done a big test.
I just wondered how you handle the whole idea.
German language
is
probably representative
for installing. building that there is,
does not,
you know, you only have need
simply
30% extra, what about your knees, what about the right to left?
We
already talked about that, how I know, like, okay, you don't only have the reading direction, but you got also Japanese book, you know, you got opposite book flipping direction. I actually have some Japanese magazines, so I know that, like, oh yeah, it's completely the other way around, and it's normal.
There's
these people over there, so what effect does it have on
the
black? And the thing you said, like, you said in Japan?
Yeah,
and it's good for Japan. For Latin readers like us, then native Latin is also like, looking at the other way around.
Yeah.
A lot of response to that, like,
yeah, most of the manufacturers
just doesn't feel right. It has, but they have to be there. Plus, the our preview does a hell of a lot more than the simple Acrobat one. This is really, you see, the working thing of check, number of sheets, okay, everything okay, print.
Because there won't be this
part of and even in the simple form. There is no left, right, but then the preview is everything too.
And we want to have it
You know when you want.
When you have everything there,
with just enough fidelity that it,
you plug the iron in,
that you can see what you're going to get, and you trust it,
things
that's what real shrink is.
Using it
real thing you want to be, in terms of the service.
And it doesn't need zooming to read the text or something, it's different too. No surprises, this is what you
I want to read question
tables.
That's
a big job, but
we're
achieving
it.
Thank you for putting
the other I get a box with a print hacker CD in it, and it often happens that I lose the CD.
Yeah.
And there are many, many viewers with Windows users, they post in the forums of Open Printing, or formerly LinuxPrinting.org, where it was named LinuxPrinting.org, we are Linux. They posted, please send me a CD of that and that model, I have lost it. So they confuse our site with they confuse it with a service for Windows.
It's an open license, so
much else.
started
all
testing has simply a little bit on the fact that taking things within the limits of
statistics.
Things on top of the data. Print it on the surface of the printer. You cannot show it. You can't show it. Print on blue paper. It may not be there. Things are incredibly difficult. And you are in a corporation, and the number of 100,000 printers in one subnet is not. It comes from one company to you.
I just want to tell you
and it's quite challenging, but it's more part of the printer installation process, which we get to later. But still, printer installation and job control to deal with after this, and that's going to be a hard nut to crack, to come up with solutions like how do you really manageable, how do you do that, you know, just one print on one printer, I don't want to install it, I just didn't want printing, it's that kind of work, stable but ever-changing situations.
The one thing we do know is where at the moment we've got, you know, pretty standard pop-up box. We do know that whatever the field is going to be there.
Thank you.
on its way.
What?
It's on its way. The slides are on their way.
Where do I send it to my email? So, and then we will screencast them. I will simply do this with my computer, so you don't need to install HP Virtual Rooms.
Okay.
Probably you don't have installed this program.
Turatani from Tokyo.
Canon.
Hi, Mike.
Yes.
Oh.
Tell this guy.
I've rebooted because I had some kind of kernel crash, a partial kernel crash, and so it could not connect to the network anymore.
Like
so it's loading now. Probably my cell phone has it already, but I need it on the computer because my cell phone cannot screencast. I have it. Save it on my computer. So I need the projector.
Oh, you're going to project it?
Ah, yes, because I'm screencasting it.
Oh, okay, that's fine. That works for me.
Yes, I'm starting the virtual projector here soon.
There you go.
A HP virtual room. Thank you.
Did I just tell you to change the size? Is that?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Works for me.
If you could tell me, is Driver Pack Ports team going to come to the open printing room for that meeting, or are you guys going to the Driver Backports room?
No, we are doing it this in this room because of the phone.
Oh, good. That's what I wanted to know.
The only ones who do the stuff with the phone.
Okay.
So the
Thank
other
you.
Whenever they want.
Okay. Thank you.
Now we have it only on screencast. Is this a problem or should I quickly upload it before?
I think that's probably time of all.
It's not a problem for me. My internet's still down, so I can't see it either way.
Yes.
Did I miss something? Is the presentation actually going to be presented over the internet?
Yes, it is.
It's presented over virtual rooms, HP virtual rooms.
Yeah.
Is there anyone on the phone who cannot follow the presentation through HP virtual rooms?
Unfortunately, I didn't get the information on that. Is that...
It's in the agenda page at Open Printing Summit.
Okay, I'll check that out.
Right under the section participation, it's got the link and the key, the code.
Okay.
What?
Jill, if you would upload the slides when you get a chance, I would appreciate it, because tomorrow morning or whenever at an internet cafe, I'll pick them up so I can catch up.
Yes, I'm uploading them anyway. I only wanted to clear whether I have to upload them now or whether we can simply give the presentation and upload them afterwards.
Yes, so
let's start the presentation.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you. Well, nice to meet everybody, and Phil, thank you for inviting us. If we're excited to be here. The timing worked out really well for us, and I think I've met a few of you, and I look forward to meeting as many of you as possible today and tomorrow. I'll be here tomorrow. I don't know if the rest of the guys will be here. I'm Mike Jazieri. I'm a product manager at Google, based out of the New York office, and I work in the team responsible for Chrome OS and Chrome being our web browser, and Chrome OS being a new operating system we're building based off of Chrome that's targeted at cloud computing and web-based applications. I'm joined by Mark Polliger, engineering director, also in that team, responsible for a number of areas, what we're going to talk about today, and then some of our engineers are here as well, Scott, Abhijit, Ajit, and Gene is somewhere, oh, there's Gene. So hopefully we can all chat after this. So thank you for inviting us. I want to talk to you a little bit about a project that we've been working on the last couple months, which we've actually spoken to several of you about already, and hopefully we'll speak to the rest of you about. So if we can go to the next slide, I can kind of give a little bit of context on why we're doing this. So there's two pretty significant trends going on in the industry today, which really impact all aspects of computing, from the hardware to the applications to the operating systems, as well as printing. and it's really the basis of why we decided to start this project, and we're making the investments we are making. The fundamental shift is, data is moving to the cloud. Apps are coming from the cloud. We see this today ourselves with our web-based applications, which we use day-to-day in-house, but are also making available to hundreds of millions of consumers. And now Google Apps for your domain continues to grow at a pretty torrid pace, and it's just one example of productivity software and other software moving to the web. And so we think it's important that printing keep up with some of that. And the key thing is that this information, these apps are accessible from anywhere. And I think you guys all know this. You guys are all have the phones. You have the devices. I don't think this is new to you. But the key point in here is that we don't think that printing necessarily has kept up with the fundamental shifts both in cloud-based computing and mobile computing. If you go to the next slide. Printing from web apps basically doesn't really work today. Printing from a web page generally works okay. You rely on the browser, and the browser spits out as best as it can from the HTML, which is fine if you're printing your boarding pass or you're printing a news article. It's probably good enough. But if you're actually printing a rich data type that a web app, and when I'm talking a web app, I'm not talking about a news article. I'm talking about a Gmail or a Google document or an Adobe Photoshop Online or much more of a rich. So in those contexts, the browser simply doesn't know anything about the underlying data and the page layout. And so you have only one option today, which is for the app to take its data, package it up in a downloadable format like we do in Google Docs today, have the user download that, and then have the user open that up in yet another application, often a PDF viewer, and print it through the mobile operating system. Not only is that inefficient, but it also just doesn't work if you're on a device that lacks that type of viewer or on a device that simply lacks the ability to talk to printers. So bottom line, I have a new email. Bottom line, printing from web apps today doesn't work, and if we're going to succeed in shifting users to web-based applications, it's important that they have as good as, if not better, printing experience, and so we want web apps to have a native printing experience. Go to the next slide, please. And then, of course, printing from mobile devices. I think this is probably an area that you are all thinking about as well. I know there's been a number of activities in the industry and some fun TV commercials that we've all seen recently. I think this was a epitomized really well this morning, actually. This has been going around TechCrunch and a number of other sites. I was going to show it if I was projecting, but if you just search for iPad printing, you'll find this photo. And someone claimed this is the solution to iPad printing. They've got their iPad on the top. They're taking a copy. They basically got their iPad flat on a copier, and they're taking a scan of it. It's funny, but it makes the point. The point is we have more and more users accessing the web, not from their personal computers, but from these mobile devices, and they simply can't print today. I think the most recent stat, I guess it's on here. Morgan Stanley's recent stat was that in 5 years, more users will access the web from mobile devices than they will from PCs. So we're spending all this time thinking about how to make printing really good on PCs while users are going elsewhere. And I'd argue that today, if you look at the data globally, it's 5 years. If you look at many countries, many developing countries, or even some developed countries, it's already happened. They're already accessing the web on mobile devices more. So we really need to bring printing to them. And we don't necessarily believe that the right solution there is to take the existing desktop model and all the weight around it and all the drivers and all the stacks and simply port it over. Some of these devices simply can't handle that type of capability, but also it's not clear to us that that's necessarily a model that we want to keep replicating as we move to these next generation devices. So go ahead and go to the next slide.
Sorry, the slides hasn't been uploaded yet. No, but they're being broadcast in the virtual room, Hintech and Bob Taylor.
Okay, well, yeah, I read about the virtual room not being workable on 64-bit Linux.
Oh, sorry about that. In that case, Till, if you could upload them or if someone could, that would be good.
Yes.
Do you mind if we do that after the talk?
What?
Do you mind if we do that after the talk?
Because they want to.
Yeah.
I do it quickly.
Okay. Well, I can speak at least to this slide while
Well, keep going. Don't let me interrupt you. Let it continue.
I have the laptop only one monitor.
Actually, I may actually keep going. And then we can get to it. So basically, the quick shift I was going to make is the project itself has come out of the operating system group within Chrome OS, which is just one instance of new mobile platforms. And it makes the point that you're going to see a proliferation. Because you're now getting data up in the cloud and apps up in the cloud, to some degree the lock-in that has existed for the last 20 years in keeping people on one particular desktop or operating system is going away. And as a result, users are now able to access their apps from many different platforms. And so we expect you'll continue to see even more operating systems, even more devices, even more platforms, which is yet another reason why it doesn't necessarily make sense to keep trying to port all these existing stacks to these devices. So we're making a bet on the web at Google, not only on web-based applications, and we believe that the apps that exist today are already pretty compelling, but it's really what you're going to see with the next generation of the app development platform, which is largely a result of what's being done in the HTML5 community, which I'm sure most of you are familiar with. But the idea behind HTML5 is simply to say, let's make the web the premier application development platform in the world. Let's fill those gaps, those things that you can't do in the web today, whether they be advanced drawing, whether it be 3D, whether it be online, whether it be native audio and video support, whether it be multi-threading. HTML5 is about filling those gaps, and a lot of the pieces are in place now. The modern version of virtually every major browser today, and soon even IE, will support a lot of the key standards, and once that evolves, I think in the next year or two, you really start seeing a quantum leap in what web apps are capable of doing.
Take the projector because I need something like 5 minutes or so until I get all the steps for this upload. So we have no screencast now. Yes, because I'm on the screencast.
We can synchronize.
Doesn't matter. It's not a printing problem, Phil.
Thank you. believe and see in the web platform evolving, but also what we're seeing in terms of devices and netbooks. So we're targeting netbooks in the first generation. I think, as I've seen several of you already have, these devices are really taking off. And so I think they'll serve as kind of a catalyst to get us there. So we're making that bet, though we think that these types of operating systems and these types of platforms will move to many different types of devices, including tablets as well. So Chrome OS for us is about taking the key principles of Chrome, which are the simplicity, the speed, and security, and applying that to the operating system as a whole. In this particular operating system, there are no native apps other than the browser. All apps are web apps. And as such, you can understand why it was so important to us to solve the web app printing problem, because that's what all of our apps are. And so really the focus there is you want a device that just gets out of your way. The operating system is very little. You just flip it on, powers on, from cold boot to browser in less than 5 seconds. That's the goal, the stated goal, and it gets you in the browser into your app as quickly as possible. That's really the focus. And then, of course, because of that, a number of security benefits come and a number of performance benefits come into play. So to address that, we wanted to create a system that enables any app, whether it be a web app, which is, of course, important to us, but including mobile apps on iPad, the iPhone, Android, and so on, or even native apps, to be able to print to any printer anywhere in the world, assuming you have the right permissions. So,
now for the people on the phone, the slides are uploaded.
Right. And we're on the slide entitled Introducing Google Cloud Print. And that's really what we're here to talk about today. We're announcing a service which will be live in a couple months, which tries to address some of these challenges that you mentioned. And it does so... And the way we try to achieve this is through having this intermediate service called the Cloud Print service. And what ends up happening in this model, and I'm going to hand it up to Mark Friedman to talk about that, is that apps no longer rely on the local browser, the local operating system, the local device capability. They talk to a cloud-based service. They send the data. They send the print option to the cloud-based service, which then transfers those to printers. And Mark will talk a little bit about how printers actually talk to the service and how we hope to work with you as a community to build some common standards for having these technologies work together.
Cool. Thanks, Mark. So there's a lot of pieces that you know that are built up around 20 years around legacy printing that are going to need to have some kind of an analog in this brave new world. So we're now on the slide called Benefits of Cloud Computing. So essentially, what do you need to do to bring these capabilities into the web app? You have to do discovery, architectures, generation of the content. You need to be able to ship the disk down to the device. You need to be able to find out the status of the device by the next. So all of those we have, and the idea here really is this works regardless of the device or the platform. Right? The just works model is what we're trying to go after. Specifically because we're using the browser as the platform, and this is increasingly it's ubiquitous. You don't have to necessarily worry modulo the fact of the entire world of browsers moving towards more convergence on HTML5 standards, that what kind of device you're on, what OS you're on, and so forth. Right? Some of that starts to happen today with convergence on pieces of the browser such as WebKit or, as I mentioned, even Microsoft and Mozilla are all sort of moving in that same direction, so no matter where you are, you're going to have the same underlying standards from HTML5 to rely on.
Mark?
Yes?
Could you get any nearer to the mic? You're almost inaudible over the noise on the bridge.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that better?
Perhaps we put it closer.
Yes, that's much better. Thank you.
No, because we're going to lose that.
We have cable issues. I lost my red and blue, and now we're back. Okay, nobody breaks. So the other issue that we want to even go beyond what you have in most printing situations today is sharing. This is the case where for a small office you might have network discovery, whether it's the zero-conf networking for your local area network, or you might have a work group that spans across subnets or across sites, but the average person at home is not going to have a NetAdmin to do that for them, probably present company accepted for this room. But generally, we want to have the model open such that you can publish your printer and discover your printer no matter where it is. And you know, sort of one of the use cases is that you have somebody, a relative perhaps, you know, the grandmother is the canonical example, who has, you know, bought a printer, and you would like her to be able to publish her printer on the net, and from across the country, you are able to you know, print to her printer directly. Now, there's services that are out there that let you do that today. That you can subscribe to, but this is a model that you know anybody can use for any printer that they happen to have. Now, of course, you don't want drive-by printing to happen, or you know, war printing, as it were. So what we are also proposing to do is to have a very similar access control model, similar to what you might have in something like Google Docs today, where you can share an individual you know, entity that's in Google Docs with one person or with a group of people, and you can give different access rights to different people. And fundamentally, at the bottom, no drivers. Right? Now, I know that's a bit of a misnomer. We're going to have drivers for legacy printers, and I'll get to that. But fundamentally, the idea is to really simplify the driver hell that you know, we all know people have to live with and have to update on their machines. And even with the advances that people in this room are even helping to help make about you know, discovery of new drivers and so forth, we really want to make that just dirt simple. We're on the slide called key components. So what do we need to do to make this happen? Well, first of all, we need the apps, and that's happening right now. So, you know, increasingly, and we had this discussion over lunch, which is sort of, so what is a web app? It's kind of this nebulous concept, but you think about it, there are probably web pages that you go to today that you have ubiquitously available in your browser all the time and that you interact with, right? Whether it's some kind of a webmail service that's out there, whether it's some kind of document authoring, and there's numerous ones that are out there, those are web apps. They're applications using the browser as the platform instead of the native OS and whatever, you know, UI toolkit that you happen to have. Right? So that is happening today. You need a cloud print service, and that's, you know, we're talking today about Google Cloud Print to make that happen, but we fully know that there are going to be other ones coming along as well that we want to interact with. Right? The next thing you need are smarter printers. So the whole idea of getting rid of drivers and getting rid of the whole driver stack and the queuing stack and so forth is to get more intelligent devices. And we know that those are going to be coming out. You know, increasingly today, you have a lot of printers that you can buy and they talk Wi-Fi, or, you know, they have a small print queue in them, but fundamentally you still have to have the driver stack on some PC somewhere, right, generating whatever the native print stream is and sending it down the line. Well, that's going to start, you know, shoving its way into the printer as well, eliminating the need for the interim device and all of the drivers that it has. But, of course, there are tons of printers out there today that people like, love, use, will continue to use for a long time. So from that standpoint,
it might be helpful to go back to the diagram and point at the pieces we're talking about here.
Yes. So we already talked about apps. We talked about this, the cloud print, and then you have sort of two classes of devices. You have a cloud-aware printer, which I just talked about, and then for legacy printers, which are all the existing printers that are out there today, we need some mechanism to get from the cloud to them, right? So some of that intelligence may actually be in the cloud itself, or in the instance of what we're going to be announcing today that you can actually take a look at, is a proxy that runs on your PC that acts as an interim device that we can reflect off of to go to the printer using the print stack that's required for the devices that are out there. So what's going to make this successful? And this is where we come and ask for your participation, help, and suggestions, right? Fundamentally, we know that this isn't going to work if we do it alone. Google is not a printer manufacturing company, nor do we intend to be, as far as I know. So we need to make sure that this is going to work with all of the vendors that are out there and the various pipelines and systems that we already have in place, right? We don't want to do this in isolation. We want to be completely open about this. So if you're familiar with the development of the Chrome and Chrome OS projects, there are open source versions of them. The exact parallels are Chromium is to the Chrome browser as Chromium OS is to Chrome OS. So Chromium and Chromium OS, you can go and you can download the full source and build it today. And that is where we're going to be doing all of our work out in the open. We're going to be working with existing groups. We've talked to a number of you already, but that's the only way that this is going to work, right? We're not trying to go this alone. We want to make sure that, you know, particularly for standards like IPP Everywhere, the existing transport protocols, the existing discovery protocols, the existing capability database protocols that are out there, we want to reuse all of that, right? So let me be clear, this is not, you know, something that's done in isolation. We need your help and we need your suggestions in order to make this work. Right. So what's the project status right now? So we expect to have this live in a number of months, but we have our first iteration, which I think Sanjeev actually pushed out to our code base right before we walked into this room. There's a number.
What he's doing.
Yeah, he ripped it up this morning and pushed it just right now. So, no, it's been in the works for a little while, and we wanted to make sure that what we pushed out there was a complete system, you know, sort of a V0, if you will, that you can actually take a look at and see some of the concepts that we have out there. There's a URL that's on this last slide, code.google.com/cloudprint, which may or may not be live right now. Which is live right now. And it has pointers to some of the design docs, it has pointers to the code, has pointers to some of the data format decisions that we use. For example, the interim format that we want to generate for a document that we push down to the proxy, the printer proxies that we have right now is PDF. And, you know, the capabilities like PBDs, that for discovering the printer capabilities and so forth, the design decisions that we made. For example, right now on Windows, the way that this works is that we, you know, the printer proxy goes and it looks for the printers that you have access to locally and offers to, you know, essentially publish them for you and you alone to be made available to CloudPrint 2. Okay? And then once that sort of starts, the self-discovery starts that process, you can then decide what you want to do in terms of access and so forth. But that's all in the design docs that you can take a look at. Okay. So we absolutely do want to work with you. Those of you that we have already spoken with will continue to work with. Those that we haven't yet, we'd like to meet you today. And like I said, we have seated this room with the entire team. I apologize for taking all the chairs. But we are all here to have the conversations about what the next steps are. And more updates in the coming months. There's going to be blog posts. You can follow the progress of the code directly by looking at the Git repository for these projects. You can make contributions. You can open bugs. You can open feature requests and so forth. So, you know, one of the really scary things for this, as well as one of the most powerful things, is the fact that it's being done.
So, what was your last word?
Okay.
Out in the open.
Cool. Thanks, Mark. I want to go back real quick to the diagram and just point out a couple of use cases, because I know we went through this pretty quickly, and I just want to talk a little bit about why we think this is powerful from a user experience perspective. Mark touched on some of the issues. From an app perspective, again, the key value here is it brings native printing capabilities to web apps. I think that's pretty fundamental. What that means is when a web-based application integrates with the service, the user experience is in the web app, they go and they select a print option, file print, or whatever it looks like, a print link in a web-based email app. At that point, the app calls the service and says, this user wants to print. And then on behalf of that user, essentially a common print dialog, but a web-based common print dialog is shown that shows for that particular user what printers they have personally registered, what printers have been shared with them, and perhaps what printers are accessible through in the general public realm that they're in. It could be a commercial printer or it could be just a locally discovered printer. And the user then picks and does the typical, you know, options of what they want to print. And at that point, the data and the print ticket go from the cloud-based service to the printer, either directly if it's a cloud-aware printer, which we're hoping to work with all of you to develop and create, or to a legacy printer through one of these proxies. So the cool part about that is when this web app integrates with that, it now can guarantee its users can print on any browser on any device, right? And you have demos that, you know, AlphaJet and others have put together of some of our own web-based applications. A couple lines of code that the web app needed to add to make this work enabled printing on that web app on the mobile phone, on the tablet, on the PC, on everything, and we think that's pretty high. That's pretty significant from a leverage perspective. But it really is not limited to web apps, right? Native applications, whether they be mobile native applications or desktop native applications, can make use of this service just as easily. there's the sharing that Mark referred to, which we think is pretty powerful. You know, the scenario he referenced with, you know, grandma sharing her printer to you. Actually do some pretty cool things. I mean, I can imagine, I actually bought my grandmother one of these digital frames, which I think is pretty cool, and I regularly, if I am on a trip or I see something cool, I do take a photo with my phone and email it to the email address of the digital frame, which then shows up there, and so she really gets a real-time perspective, because she's not going on Facebook to see my photos, right? She needs it right there. Well, I can take it to the next step and literally be somewhere, hey, look, it's the Eiffel Tower, hit print, and it goes on her printer. Like, literally, she starts seeing photos print out, right? You can imagine a whole new class of photo printers that are just designed to get cloud-based print jobs, photo jobs sent to them. It starts creating some interesting scenarios. Obviously, from an IT perspective, for the set of companies and businesses that are making the shift to the cloud, where what they're saying is, look, I want to cut my IT costs, I don't want to run servers in-house, this eliminates the need for the print server. That's one less server that you need to have in your environment. And that's obviously for that class of customers, pretty powerful. So those are just some of the scenarios we think that this enables, many more. And again, as Mark said, what you'll see on the site today, our early design docs, our early code, some of the protocols that we speak are things that we've created just to get the system up and running, but as Mark said, we'd like to eventually leverage what exists either in the community or what is being developed or what needs to be developed. And we think the only way this will really succeed is if there's a common open protocol, whether taking the existing ones and extending them or defining new ones for cloud printing. Anyway, I think that's it. I think at this point we'll just open it up for questions.
Perhaps I've missed it.
Yes.
What is the, I'll use the word language, what is the format of the data actually sent to a printer or to a cloud compatible printer?
Yes. Sanjeev, you want to speak to that?
So the question for folks on the phone, I don't know if you can hear on the phone, but sort of what is the interchange format that's actually sent down to printers?
Sanjeev's going to come up with
that. Yeah,
why don't you come up and speak to that?
This is Sanjeev, one of the engineers on the team.
Try not to.
Cool.
Should have got under it.
Can take off the cable because now pass it up to me or so.
Sure. There you go. Go ahead.
So the actual form, the data itself that's being sent to the printer is PDF currently. Now, that said, we haven't. So what we've done right now is the actual formats, the data formats as well as the job ticket formats as well as the capabilities formats are actually different based on different scenarios. And it would basically, so we can support, it's a cloud service, it can support multiple formats. For now, what we have built is specific formats that address the Windows-based proxy, the Mac-based proxy, as well as any, so if there are any actual cloud-aware printers that, you know, when we work with vendors to develop the protocol, we'll essentially work with them to figure out what the format is best suited. What we have right now, the working implementation we have right now is with the Windows proxy, and for the Windows proxy, PDF, Windows and Mac proxy, PDF is the actual data format, the format for the document. And for the actual job ticket and capabilities format, again, it depends on Windows or Mac, and it will be different for like an actual cloud-aware printer, and that's where we want to try and get to one, ideally one standard format for all cloud-aware printers. For proxies, for legacy printers, we essentially have to work with whatever operating system support exists.
So that you have a native language, right? And presumably, the Chrome OS right now will be doing the translation from whatever they're displaying the image in, whatever the application is going, into
PDF.
One of the PDF forms.
That is correct.
That's a great question, a great point. So if you're printing on Chrome OS, what happens depends on what you're actually printing from. So if you're, again, all things in Chrome OS are web apps. If you're in a web app that is itself integrated with a cloud print service, so if you're in one of our apps that's going to integrate into the service, then Chrome OS, the Chrome on Chrome OS, everything is out of the loop on the print. It's entirely the web app talking to the cloud print service to do the print. OS is out of the loop. But if what you're printing is an arbitrary web page that is itself not integrated with the cloud print service, then the app that is printing is the browser on Chrome OS. And in that case, the browser will take the content of the HTML, turn it into PDF, send that file through the cloud print service.
Okay.
Printer. And then eventually what hits the printer, again, today is going to be PDF, but in the future it could be something else.
Actually, today what hits the printer is not even PDF. It's whatever, because today what PDF goes to the proxy, and the proxy then takes this PDF and prints it out to the actual printer using the native printer drivers.
But we're looking at developing a cloud printer.
Yes.
Right.
That is
correct. It's trying to have, in addition to whatever else it might be doing, some language that is intended to receive the print jobs.
So when you say language, do you mean the format for the data? Do you mean the format for the job ticket? Or do you mean the actual protocol to communicate with the cloud print service?
Well, you could...
In fact, the
job ticket and the data might be in the same language, or they might be separate languages. I don't know.
We are here to start the dialogue.
Right.
Well, what should those be?
Is the job ticket using KDF format and the next level style, you know?
So that's ideally where we want to get is we have one standard for all cloud over printers. It may be an ambitious goal, but essentially that's what we want to get, right? So that we have one standard for the job ticket format, for the capabilities, for the data, and that's what we push out to all cloud over printers. The reality is we might end up with two or three.
So are you guys saying that the PDF interchange format for now is kind of an interim kind of thing, because I'll have a low-end inkjet kind of a printer where I can't afford to have a...
So you go to your proxy to do that?
Yeah.
Which goes to the driver then?
If you're using the proxy model, then it just works. It's still PDF. PDF goes to the proxy. The proxy
is the low-end printers.
For cloud-aware printers, there needs to be something converting that high-level format that the app is going to send us to whatever browser. We want to work with you guys to define what that should be. Because it's a cloud-based service, it can support. It's not out of the realm of reality to say, you know, I'm going to take in 50 different formats and I'm going to output one of three different formats.
I want to push it in such a way that what I'm saying is a cloud-aware low-end printer tool, not just a high-end laser jet or...
That's the proxy.
For the legacy printers. You could have a low-end cloud-aware printer.
Yeah, I want a low-end cloud-aware printer.
Sure.
I don't want a proxy.
Absolutely. And that is one of the targets.
Are you guys saying that exactly?
So, yes, we have to decide on a format. It very likely won't be PDF, because PDF is probably too expensive to process on these low-end printers. So it has to be some low-level raster format.
Right. Yeah.
And yes, we have to decide on a format. The problem today is that there's just way too many raster formats for the legacy printers. So the ideal would be to decide on a format.
This is still up for discussion.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's why we're here. We're trying to get this out into the public as early as possible. And I want to point out something. There's going to be many of these cloud print services, right? There's not going to be just one. I suspect we'll see them from different vendors. I suspect we'll see them from, I'm sure that other people doing cloud-based applications. One way that I like to think about it, and I'm not saying it should be architected this way, I'm not the engineer this way, but I kind of think of it to some degree the way email works, right? You have a common protocol. You have many different email servers. They're all federated. There's a common protocol that they exchange messages, and everyone has an account on some email server. Right now, let's ignore the spam security issue. Do a better job of that. But bottom line, it should be similar to this, that I should be able to buy a printer, and I should be able to connect that printer to whatever cloud print service I choose to use. And then my app, whatever cloud print service it talks to, can either send the print job directly to a printer, or it need be routed through another cloud print service. You can imagine that's one way this thing evolves. Obviously, there's cases in which you want the printer to talk directly to your cloud print service for security reasons. There's other cases where it's going to go through another one, and so I can see that being one way this model evolves. Yes?
How do you
cross
the open firewall?
Preston was, how do we deal with corporate firewalls?
So this is for push the data out to the printer?
So essentially, the
format will evolve. Right now what we're using is we're using XMPP for notifications. So it's an XMPP notification that goes to the device, and the device then pulls off the job.
I would suggest that would be true of any cloud connection, right? So whatever the cloud system uses is what...
Right. So essentially the device makes an XMPP connection to our cloud, and when there's a print job available, the device gets a notification, and then it pulls the data.
I'd like to make an observation.
Yes.
all right? And I'm sure you're aware of it. But the considerations that you identified are exactly the ones, well, almost exactly the ones, that IPP Everywhere is addressing. Mm-hmm. All right? So it would be very nice if there could be some consolidation of effort here so that the efforts could be concentrated in the few places rather than...
Absolutely. Could avoid in inventing the wheel twice instead of now inventing a new standard.
So what I
should have left, not reinvent the wheel on the side.
I would just challenge you and the community who are working on IPP Everywhere to consider a web app scenario. Because as I've read the IPP Everywhere doc, it does address a lot of the problems listed above, but it does not address how to build web apps. And that's probably the one area of extension or resolution you need. And I think if it does that, then it would probably solve what we're trying to do.
But the majority of the infrastructure for job printer capabilities, even the transport, sort of on the wire protocol and so forth, yes, we absolutely are in agreement.
I would make one other maybe question. And I'm wondering if you're aware of the PSI standard, which was developed maybe 5-6 years ago. All right. And in fact, very much dealt with it in a more general sense. But again, the idea of printing through a central source or a central capability from anywhere. And there was a lot of excellent work done there. It would again be interesting if you could take a look at that. That's on the Printer Working Group website. It is, something, but most of the work, in fact, was done by HP. So I would imagine you could talk with HP. Maybe you already have those ideas. But
sure, yeah, we would have.
And the other thing is, not really on the data transfer, but really, we have this digital media position both as a document interface format and a spool file format. I mean, we have a lot of crap issues with linear. I mean, if it's not really linearized, I mean, mm-hmm. I spend a whole lot of time in my firmware and it eats up all the time. So mm-hmm. Is there any things you guys have thought on to really, make it being consumed in an interleaved fashion so that I don't need to spend,
When the printer is actually consuming the PDF,
right.
So you can basically have a sliding window to consume the document.
Yeah.
Okay.
So since we don't have an actual
the point I'm trying to make is if you make it too broad, as a display kind of a format, it gets hit for us when it goes down the printing stack down the firmware. And that's what's happening with XPS. It's too broad a format, and my engine speed.
I mean, one of our use cases is that somebody has a PDF document already in whatever, wherever they have it, and they're asking to print it, and, we're sort of hands-off, we're just acting as a transport for it. I don't know that we could help there, but certainly for saying if we're going to be using PDF as like you said, basically the school file format as well, recommending can you do it in a linearized or compartmentalized way so that you can stream it.
I think we need to find and pick the right thing that I want to think.
Mm-hmm.
Is Google going to publish a kind of cloud area thing that they have done?
Right, so the way this works, and again, this is...
The question was, how do you do discovery across...
Right. How do you know our printer? So, again, this is how, our cloud print service will work. Others may work slightly differently. We're trying to follow the exact same model for permission and accessibility as we follow for our Google Docs applications. Same sharing model. So there's one owner who registers the printer in different ways than what you can register the printer. At that point, you can choose to share it to others. And sharing it to others can be as simple as sharing it within the sharing application or sending the URL to them. Click on this URL, you can now print my printer. And it can be a temporary thing or a permanent thing. Or you can choose to make it public to some scope. Public to the world, should be public to a particular policy or whatever it may be. What we find is that will model and people understand. And so in that world, people, when you as a public service, set of printers available to you as a user is entirely a function of the user who logged in to that app at that moment.
So I think for the geographical location of the printer,
mm-hmm.
for printer tends not to have a GPS.
Would be great if they did.
Yeah.
Would be
the question was, how do you find the nearest printer to you?
Right.
So you can imagine that, you know, as we evolve this, that there will be, you know, sort of richer discovery mechanisms which are based on other criteria. Like you said, maybe one of them is geographic.
Right.
And
so,
in worst
so,
case, we can do, you know, IP.
Yes.
Discovery
IP geolocation.
Bit,
yes.
But it's one way to do some
right.
rudimentary.
Any other questions?
Yes, sir.
So I'm wondering if during the printing, then some error happens, so where you're going to store the data? Where going to you keep the data type in your cloud or the local?
If there's an error in the printer?
Yeah.
So the data is kept. The data is kept on the cloud print service until it's transferred. If it's transferred directly to a cloud aware printer, then
right.
That's the communication. In the case of legacy printer, there's kind of two spooling, spooling in the cloud and then spooling in the local operating system, acting as the proxy. So there's a case there where the cloud sends it to the proxy, and the proxy fails. But there's still communication back, so you can still see the error state.
You can think of the cloud basically as a very, very long printer cable, and it's on the wire. It's on the wire until it's act.
Right.
And then once it is, it's no longer.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, the cloud will use the files are pulled to the cloud until the printer has pulled the job down successfully and printed it and essentially notified the cloud that the job has been printed, at which time.
And we're certainly happy to, I know we're probably almost out of time, we're happy to talk to you guys more. The key thing for us here is we're interested in making the web app experience. Printing is such an important part of what you do on the web and on apps in general. We want to bring it into the world. We think it's going to be great for the industry because, again, if more than 50% of users are no longer on PCs and they're on these other devices, well, if you want people to keep printing, print more, and print more pages and more ink and all that, then you really need to start addressing, I think, we do as a community, start addressing those use cases, and I think this is one model that addresses that. But as you can see, there's gaps in the implementation, and therefore we hope to work.
Can I
come up with the right model?
Wait, one more question.
Yes.
What is the fee structure here? Who pays for the cloud server?
In whoever built the cloud print server pays for that.
Okay, so if someone wants to print from their whatever, from their cloud-based system, they're probably going to have to pay someone.
Well, no, I mean, we have no intention of charging for service, this service itself, and we have services we charge for, but if an app there will be an API that this service exposes to web-based and native applications to print. There will be no fee associated with using that service. And I presume that printers won't charge a fee, though the owner of the printer may.
Well, they might choose to try to print services.
Right. Yeah, but we have no intention of charging for.
No, I meant about the cloud itself. So that is the cloud print service.
Is this going to be part of the Google Apps services?
I mean, that's the initial, so the question is it's going to be part of Google Apps. That's sort of the model that we're going after. In terms of where this thing is going to eventually reside, that's probably to be decided.
Yeah, and to be perfectly candid, we're literally, I mean, this was developed just in the last few months. We're now in the process internally at Google to talking for all those teams and then prototyping the integration and so on. We're not ready to say which exact ones we'll have it when, because those teams aren't ready to say that, but it's our goal that you'll be able to go to hopefully all Google Apps and eventually
I mean, this is one of the groups that we're talking to. If you're familiar with GWT, the Google Web Toolkit, which is, you know, what we publish for free that you can build apps. You know, certainly that might be. You can imagine that being one of the teams that we'll talk to about how do you integrate this as sort of one of the services that you have available to apps.
And there's a lot of opportunities to do interesting things here. There's a lot of opportunities to take the code that you've just submitted an hour ago and update firmware for existing printers, to add it to routers. Start creating proxies, to start prototyping cloudware printers. But there's also opportunities, I think, to add the capability to the cloud, right? Or to add it to create virtual printers on Windows and Linux so that when a user chooses to print from any native application, the printer they choose can actually be a printer through the service. There's all sorts of these extensions of things like that.
So what's the start point for the printer manufacturer to
what's the starting point for printer manufacturers? As we said, we've already started talking to several of you. We'd like to talk to all of you. We apologize if we haven't talked to you yet. It's a matter of our limited time. But we want the dialogue to start now. possible.
For example, I think you are going to define some protocol.
So the documents have been published, and the code that's been submitted to the Chromium code review site, that can be used as a reference implementation, essentially for. That was one of the goals behind checking it in early, even though it's not really ready for production yet, is that it can be public and serve as a reference implementation for the protocol.
But again, we're hoping the community will also have a dialogue around what the right protocols are.
Right. So the short of it is those documents are going to be changing over time with your input. So if you want to participate in the process, please come talk to us afterwards.
The process is open.
Yeah, the process is open.
Yes.
And one thing, in the last 10 years, we have developed an API for job tickets, JT API, and you are handling job tickets like JDF or so. Could it be useful for you to have such an API? It's the only thing which we did not succeed yet is to implement it, but...
That's a caveat.
So yeah, that is the thing. There are many existing job ticket as well as capabilities formats, and we need to, for the actual, like I said, for the proxies, we've gone with whatever the operating system supported. For Macs, you know, we're going to go with PPDs. For Windows, we're going to go with the XPS stuff, the XML specification. But for an actual Cloudware printer, we need to have that dialogue as to what job ticket format we're going to use.
So you said for Windows, you're going
to XPS? Not the data itself, the job ticket format.
Okay,
the data is
the job ticket format. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Right. Not the actual data stream.
The data stream is PDF. Yeah. The job ticket format as well as the capabilities are XPS, basically.
Yeah.
Yes, PDF is a good, it's very good as data format, especially if you have a Linux client and a non-cloud capable printer. Under Linux, we have already a PDF workflow.
Mm-hmm.
We are approaching a PDF workflow.
Yeah.
And also, this infrastructure which does the PDF printing workflow can perhaps be used inside the cloud printing service.
Yeah, and we're certainly looking at what the right way to do that is and get the best fidelity. In fact, another reason why we have started with PDF is that many of the apps we're working with initially, again, they already support exporting their web format into PDF because that's what they've had to do to let their users print today. So it was like an efficient way.
I think you can contact the Public Printer Working Group, but I would suggest if someone could attend the next meeting, which is at Xerox in Webster, New York, in June. And I don't know if you're going to be here tomorrow, but Mike Sweet is also the chairman of the Printer Working Group. Since this is virtually all the printer manufacturers are a member there, it would give you a chance to talk to multiple printer vendors at the same time and would avoid some feeling that you're trying to wire this to a particular vendor, which I'm sure you don't want to do, and I'm sure you don't want that feeling.
Right, we definitely want to have the dialogue. I think we want to participate in these communities. Naturally, I would say that there's probably going to be some people who are more progressive in kind of metal printers and things like that. So we want to see these solutions get out there. So time will certainly help to work on many of those problems.
Do you guys have any timeline for this?
Yeah. Our goal is to get...
Yes.
I'd like to get some of the service out in the next few months. Next few months, some of the service will be live. And from there, we'll just evolve it. More capabilities, more apps, hopefully.
For you, sir. Because we are not ready.
Yeah, I mean, the proxy is going to work. All printers that exist today will work through the proxy. Nothing for you to do on your part. But it's really, I think, where we eventually want to get is the software. So,
the native print apps that you think
The native print apps?
Yeah.
Okay,
the native apps.
Native apps. Okay. At this stage, I can't comment on that. We're talking to a lot of different products, but they're just learning about.
You mean by native form. Apps as in native apps on the desktop, or do you mean?
Right,
yeah. So the goal right now is
web apps.
Is web apps.
Right.
Okay. So native
you're
apps.
Able to iterate much faster.
Okay. Native apps can print like Mike was saying. It would be relatively easy to create a virtual printer driver on Windows, for example. That would submit to the Cloud Print service. It's not something we're actively building right now, but given the protocol, it's a fairly.
So you expect the native apps to generate PDF and then.
I expect some native apps. My guess is that the virtual printer will be.
Okay. So the virtual print driver will actually generate the PDF.
I mean, the
scale
that that gives, the leverage process. That gives you, is it almost makes it like not worth having.
We've got two types of applications. One type is like a web app. Like a GDoc, SuperDoc.
Yeah.
Right. And so SuperDoc will generate PDF to send to cloud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another type is the static, like web pages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in that case, web browser will generate that.
Correct.
So let's say I'm playing an online game, and I want to see a good screenshot. I want to print that. But does that mean that the game must
Right. We don't have all the details published yet on that, but we will support a large number of input formats. So if the game is more efficient for them to just make a screenshot and send us a JPEG, then we'll take the JPEG.
So you require the game itself to have the capability of capture the screen and the sound.
Well,
the browser can take a snapshot and the sound. Right?
Or the underlying OS needs to be able to do a print screen type of capability. Yes.
So do you, but by game, do you mean your game is running in the browser?
I mean, like, application running in browser, but doesn't print.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so in the case where the browser, so for example, in the case of the Chrome OS browser, the Chrome OS browser will essentially package up whatever is the DOM that you're seeing on your a snapshot of what it would have printed if it, you know, and send that out as PDF. And in that case, in a generic, for a generic web page, it's the browser that's the app, that's the web app.
So you guys don't use the CSS print prompt at all for web printing?
We are still working on how to convert
web page
into
PDF.
Right. There are a bunch of possible implementations. We're still working on that.
Let me question. First, printing feature comes as a web app to a cloud proxy in 2C. Then, what are the printing features? I mean, what?
Stay tuned. I don't have any more.
I'm just going to be proud. You guys are proud of me.
Okay.
Can you elaborate on the proxy support rollout? All the legacy drivers.
Right. So what we're going to do is we've developed what we're going to do to check in is an addition to the version of Chrome, our browser that runs on Windows, that adds proxy capabilities to Windows. And that code is largely cross-platform. There's some additional work we need to do to make it work on the Mac or the next version. So basically, we're going to use for our proxy, we're going to use the Chrome browser. The user experience will be, you know, I set up, you know, I'm using a web app that uses the Cloud Print service, and I want to be able to make my home printer, or my work printer, work in the Cloud Print service. I will install Chrome if I don't already have it on the machine that printer is installed on directly to the USB network, and there'll be an option for me to go and turn on
the Chrome browser or Chrome web?
The Chrome browser.
So Chrome can kind of play on both sides of this, but it's not required on either side, actually. The way it can play roles, it can be an app printing web pages to the service, but we're also using it as a distribution vehicle for the proxy on the machine that's connected to the OLED printer. There's nothing about the browser, per se, that we're necessarily leveraging, but it's just a convenient distribution vehicle for us.
Do you guys have a legacy
Ask it again. Sorry.
Where's the question?
Do
you guys supposed to
legacy
printing without
proxy?
You mean
from Chrome OS?
Right.
No.
Okay.
Because Chrome OS, all the apps are web apps,
we're going to
use the Cloud Print service.
What about the off-print app? So the Chrome OS for HTML5.
Oh, okay.
You want us to tweak that?
Today we don't have that capability if you see in the design. But I think you're it's a good question. I think it's important that we think about that scenario. And I would say when the web apps start using that capability, when there are enough web apps that it can actually work offline, then I think we would look at adding that capability. Yeah. The thing is, you know, a lot of people often ask when we talk about this, well, what about direct print? I don't think these things are mutually exclusive. I think there's plenty of cases where it makes sense to go through the cloud because then you don't have to rely on any native capabilities on the device or the OS or the browser if you're in a web app. But there's also cases where you could be right next to a printer and you just want to send it basically. And I don't think, you know, obviously you guys are doing a lot of work to make that happen. But I don't think these things are mutually exclusive. Hopefully they'll work for you.
Chrome OS itself, hardware, this Chrome OS cannot be used as a proxy.
Correct. Chrome OS as the, will not have any print jobs. That's one less platform you have to support your drive.
So your legacy, your vPrinter, you cannot connect to the Chrome OS device. You connect it to your PC, and when you print from the Chrome OS device, it sends the PDF into the internet, to the cloud print service, and it comes back into your home, but into the PC.
I cannot have said it better myself. Or your PC or a proxy device. And one thing we'd like to see is, obviously, if it's your PC, there are some inconveniences associated with that. Your PC has to be left on, and so on and so forth. We expect to see, and hope to see, some folks in the industry build little proxy devices, which are basically, you know, mini routers that are a proxy that you can plug
for V1, that's exactly the story.
And such router could run cups and download drivers from home.
Absolutely.
So, am I understanding correctly that printer jobs remain in the cloud proxy once you print it out?
Once you print it out, it's on paper. And that's all. That's the only place it exists.
Because the the user rate. That's actually tested to keep the printed job or just modification, whatever that is. And there's a bunch of the management process.
So it's like for repeating a job that you've already submitted,
thing.
Okay.
You know, that's actually enough for them.
Yeah.
I'm outside the offering, and if you guys provide the export API for us to kind of
the job with the ticket and everything. So the answer is for MFPs, how do you sort of capture the whole state so that you can repeat it later? I'm paraphrasing correctly. So MFPs, I have to say, have tremendous amounts of capabilities that are probably going to not be available in our initial implementation just because of the complexity that they can offer, but certainly something like preserved print jobs, I don't know if there's a better term for it, is something that, you know, we could certainly consider.
I think often the question of how the job goes through firewalls is that the printer job is available and the printer will pull the job from the cloud. Right?
Yes.
So how about the printer status? So does it mean the printer needs to push the status out of the cloud?
Yes, through XMPP. Yes.
Very correct.
So it looks like you don't require legacy printer to support MFP PDF, but you do for the cloud-aware printer.
No. So the cloud-aware printer, the format is something that we have to work with, and we can work. We have to work with, you know, you guys, and there's potentially multiple formats that we will support. PDF is essentially what we've chosen for our proxies because it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I just wonder, between the legacy printer and the proxy,
native printer. We're, for lack of a better term, we're hijacking the OS's drivers here.
Right. I just wondered why you didn't do the same thing in the cloud.
You mean run the drivers in the cloud?
No,
right.
Run the proxy on the Google Cloud PC.
On the PC?
I
can
think of a number of reasons.
Number of reasons why we don't necessarily want to run the whole stack in the cloud per se, but ultimately I think when that protocol is defined, or set of protocols is defined, some driver-ish logic will fit in the cloud.
Yeah. And maybe even you should separate protocol and data.
They should be separate
apps. This is a cloud-aware printer is legacy printer plus proxy bundled together.
That is a way to think about it, yes. You could take a legacy printer that you can update the firmware for, add the proxy to it, and call it a cloud-aware printer.
Yep, right.
So is it the ability to enter an own part in the PDF? PDF pipes basically the improvement of the PDF.
Oh, medium.
Yes, or you could do embedded font subsetting, all of that kind of stuff. Cool.
Thanks,
Chris.
I think the feedback and the questions were very helpful to us. I know I haven't.
I feel very grilled.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to us.
Unfortunately, you said the feedback is regular.
You already know.
Actually,
well, you have my card, so
yes.
Feel free to
call me quick.
Can we give it up there? You can respond to the blog post.
And you
I can,
you can
add it.
I think I have it.
Richard, I've got a question.
Oh, sorry, question on the phone?
Hi.
Hi.
How far are you from actually having a demo of any combination of device with any combination of printers of your choice?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Demo, how far are we from?
How far are you from actually having a prototype demo of any combination of device of your choice?
We have that working internally. So we have the proxy code that was submitted for review today. That's been tested with a bunch of printers internally. So we have something working internally, but it's essentially hacked together, glued together. It's not ready for production yet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, it would be interesting to actually see it working with whatever combination of device you can carry along.
Both of you.
Okay. We have been able to demo printing from an iPhone, for example.
Thank you.
He has been looking for
using this.
Okay.
He's at Google.
He's at
Google. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So you can point him our way.
Should take him on the road. Right. Let me have a. I know I have to get the phone number.
Hey, you asked a good question. I don't know if I have. Yeah, I have one card. Here you go. I have
no work.
Yes,
I think we should have somehow regularly communicate so that we can.
Now that we're out in the open, it helps.
So we've been trying with the idea. They said that.
Technology we talked about your comment.
I haven't actually come up with
most of all.
Talking about using cups or...
And then call
myself one of the questions from OS.
So the interesting thing for us is we're really looking beyond taking all that some kind of dialogue-based workflow for foundation. While you guys went to EDM, there's a bunch of open documents
more question of
some of the XML.
Like I said,
because of popularity?
Well, yes. So one of the web apps that we're working with already
for the common print dialogue,
what essentially the easiest
talk about and what capabilities we have.
So,
and taking a wholesale and
pretty much essentially for my
you must be
either support PDF or PDF can be from Windows. There's no native support.
Right, right.
There are so many, you know,
programs on the fire
that, so essentially that was the
but that covers 99% of the problem.
Okay.
So what we have to figure out is
the goal is to keep it
scalable, not just one format, but
It doesn't have to be Google, right?
So when you work on the Google Doc, your data is not on the cloud.
Right.
What exactly happens when you want to